I'm a liar at night, I'm a fighter by day, I'm a rolling thunder on the back of the rain.
Ladies and gentlemen, greetings and salutations, whatever greeting you want to use. Welcome to our review of No Mercy 2016 here at Gerwerk.net. That is GERWECK.net. Gerwerk.net, your source for pro wrestling since 1997. My name is Atlee Green, and joining me, as always, is the funky weapon himself, Adam Cohn.
We are back, peoples.
Yes, we are back indeed with the 2016 WWE No Mercy review. This is the second SmackDown brand pay-per-view. And we actually got a little bit of news, Adam, before the show began, as WWE.com announced that the triple threat match for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship was going to be the opening match on the pay-per-view portion of the show, which is something that's never happened before. Yes, the World Heavyweight Championship has been the first match in a couple of WrestleManias, but never ever has the WWE World Heavyweight title opened a pay-per-view. So this was definitely new ground for WWE. And reports came out throughout the evening that they did this because of the U.S. presidential debate happening at 9 p.m. Eastern time, pretty much during the same exact time as No Mercy. So WWE wanted to have the triple threat match in order to keep viewers on the show. So, I mean, we'll definitely talk about that a little more in detail. But let's talk about the opening match of the kickoff show, which was basically American Alpha and the Hype Brothers went over on the Ascension of the Vaude Villains when Jason Jordan pinned Aiden English. There was really nothing else to really talk about here. Nothing bad, nothing good. Just it was what it was. And, of course, Kurt Hawkins came out, and we thought he was going to have a match. But he didn't have a match. He just said face the facts, came out to the ring, and said he'll be on SmackDown. So maybe he'll actually wrestle on SmackDown. So we'll see what happens there. But the opening of the pay-per-view portion, as we talked about, was AJ Styles defeating John Cena and Dean Ambrose to retain the heavyweight championship in a triple threat match that was absolutely amazing from top to bottom. And what I really liked about this match was that they really kept you guessing. Like, 1 minute, you're thinking, okay, AJ's going to go over. Next minute, you're thinking, okay, you know, I think Cena's going to go over. Then the next minute, you're thinking, okay, they may actually give it to Dean Ambrose. And I just loved a lot of the spots that they had. I loved a lot of the creativity they used to make this match happen. I even liked one of my favorite moments. It's a little moment, but one of my favorite moments was when AJ Styles about to tap out to John Cena's FTSU, and then Dean Ambrose grabs AJ Styles' hand, so therefore he can't tap out. And John Cena just has this look of anger in his face, like, just looking at Dean. He's like, do you know what you just cost me? Do you know what you just cost me? But again, when you say the words, the phrase action-packed, this match is action-packed from top to bottom, and it deserved all of the "this is awesome" chance it got. But in the end, AJ Styles got the win after blasting John Cena in the midsection and across the back with a steel chair.
Yeah, I give this match 4.5 out of 5 stars. The reason I'm not giving this match a perfect 5 out of 5 was the double submission that made AJ tap out. And as soon as I saw Dean setting him up, I'm like, as soon as I saw Cena come in, I'm like, Cena's coming in. He's going to double tap out. This match is going to be the restarted. And I'm like, it ruined the flow of the match. That match and what they were doing in the ring was money, and it did not need that spot in the least. I mean, I don't know if you disagree, but I don't think that spot was needed in that match. Other than that, I have no complaints about this match, and I thought it was phenomenal, pun intended.
I had no problem with this, with the double submission spot being in there, because it actually kind of brought some drama to the match, where Styles taps out due to the submission efforts of both John Cena and Dean Ambrose, and you have both wrestlers raising their hand, wondering what the hell is going to happen. In the past, usually what happens when the double submission spot happens is what we saw. The referee just says, no, it wasn't 1 minute, it was 2, so therefore it doesn't count. And plus, the timekeeper rang the bell before the referee called for it. The ref actually never called for the bell. So there was, but I was thinking perhaps maybe they would do something different, like perhaps they would just make up a call that AJ Styles would be eliminated from the match and it would just come down to Cena and Ambrose or something else. But that's not what happened. And I didn't mind the spot whatsoever. And again, AJ Styles goes over the 1-2-3. And I wonder now who AJ Styles is going to wrestle next, because I don't really want to see him with Ambrose or with Cena. come Survivor Series, but at the same time, I'm starting to wonder, like, who else is there on the SmackDown roster? I mean, Orton didn't win, so you really can't do it with him, and I don't see them doing a Bray Wyatt versus AJ Styles match, but we'll see how that ultimately unfolds. But the next match is Nikki Bella versus Carmella, where Nikki Bella goes over after using what's called the Rack Attack 2.0, which, for her newest finisher, and I like that because it's less pressure on her neck because she has a surgically repaired neck, and you don't want to do the original Rack Attack and putting unnecessary pressure on your neck. But for me, Adam, this match was just kind of, it was what it was. There was really nothing bad about it, but nothing that really stood out to me either. And just like I thought, Nikki Bella was going to win. But in your opinion, Adam, did Carmella kind of like prove her worth on the main roster? Did she stand out to you in any way, shape, or form? Because to me, she didn't.
No. And it was like one or two bright spots, and those spots were the submission, because I actually thought legitimately Nikki was going to tap out. But to me, Nikki wrestled circles around Carmella, and that was one of the biggest things I was afraid of going into this match. I didn't think she was ready to come up from NXT. I think Carmella could have stayed down in NXT, got a little bit better, maybe faced Oscar again, you know, a bit more the wrestling style. She's got the character, she's got the promos. I need to see more in the ring. Nikki, to me, masterfully out-wrestled her.
I mean, the way it looks is if WWE just got in panic mode because they figured we need more wrestlers on the roster, so we decided, okay, let's just bring Carmella up. She's the closest to being ready and ever learned on the job. I'm not saying that it's curtains for Carmella. I'm just saying that she really didn't show anything that made me think, wow, okay, this chick's badass. This is a legit woman's wrestler. But then again, you never know what the wrestlers are told to do when it comes to like the producers and the agent telling them, okay, this is what we want from you in the match. And if the, for lack of a better word, the script told her to kind of just do what she was doing in the match, then there's really no room to kind of, quote, show your stuff, because it's all about Nikki Bella in the end. But moving on to the SmackDown Tag Team Championship matches, Heath Slater and Rhino, otherwise known as Beauty and the Man Beast, defeated the Usos to retain the SmackDown Tag Team Championship, and Rhino scored the pinfall. Basically, I didn't really see that coming, because I figured, okay, they got Heath Slater on the main roster, they got him signed to SmackDown after he won the match at Backlash, and I figured now they'll take the belts off him and get back and get to serious business with the Tag Team Championship. But I guess in WWE's mind, and a lot of people's mind, the team of Beauty and the Man Beast is actually getting over, and they're going to be the Tag Team Champions for a little bit, it seems.
Yeah, I got nothing to say here. I really don't. Bring on the next challengers.
Oh, goodness. I mean, I'll be curious to see who the next challengers are, because it could be American Alpha, could be the Usos again. I actually wouldn't mind seeing a triple threat match, Usos, American Alpha, and Beauty and the Man Beast. But
Atlee, you and I could be a tag team, and we could go in and beat Heath Slater and Rhino.
I don't know, because that gore hurts. That gore hurts.
I'll let you take that one.
I don't want to get hurt by the gore.
I'll tell you what, I'll take that one. You pin Rhino by coming in and then doing whatever it is you do.
Okay, we're in agreement. Anyways, the next match is Baron Corbin defeating Jack Swagger at the End of Days. And just like you with the Tag Team Championship match, I had nothing for this match. It was just a slow, plodding match where Baron Corbin got his win back against Jack Swagger. And now, they're probably going to have a third match on SmackDown to kind of see who's the better, like who's going to win the best of three, if you will. And of course, Baron Corbin's going to win that because he's the project that WWE is currently working on. So besides that, I have nothing. Again, it wasn't good, but wasn't bad either.
Just solid. Moving along.
Well, then we go to what should have been the main event of the evening, was the Dolph Ziggler defeating The Miz for the Intercontinental Championship, thus keeping his career in WWE. And it's funny, Adam, because before we talk about the match, I want to talk about the placement of this match, because as soon as it was announced that the WWE Championship match was going to open the show, you, me, everybody at Gerwick.net, and everybody else thought, yes, that means the IC title match is going to be the main event, which it should have been, because the build for this IC title match was by far the best thing happening on SmackDown, but they decided to go in a different direction. So it was kind of like a little bit of air got let out of the balloon once I saw the video graphic for this match. It said, coming up next, because right away I said, okay, that means it's not the main event, and it also means we know what the main event's going to be. So it was a little disappointing, and I don't know why WWE made that decision. I could speculate, which we will speculate about, but when we talk about the actual match, this by far was the best match on the show, and even as good as the Triple Threat match was, and believe me, it was good, this match had all the drama, the wrestling, the action, the moves, everything you want from a high-stakes encounter, The Miz and Dolph Ziggler delivered. I would be prone to say that this may be The Miz's best match, the match of his career, and I would definitely say this is one of the best matches of Dolph Ziggler's career. I think whenever you make a Miz or Dolph Ziggler DVD someday, this match will be on both of their respective DVDs. But I just really liked how there was a lot of cheating going back and forth. I also liked how Miz was kind of taunting Daniel Bryan throughout the match. So I wonder if they're trying to still tease the possibility of a Miz versus Daniel Bryan match down the line. But I just like how there was near fall after near fall after near fall, because it just really increased the drama of everything that unfolded. Of course, the Spirit Squad came running down near the end, and you thought, okay, they're going to cost off the match, because Dolph's been on a losing streak, but just when he's about to win the big one, something happens. And you thought that something would be the Spirit Squad, but not to be. Dolph kind of fought them off, and Miz hit the skull-crushing finale. Ziggler kicked out, and then the referee ejected the Spirit Squad. And then as they were being ejected, Dolph delivered the super kick for the 1, 2, 3. And Dolph Ziggler is your new Intercontinental Champion. And Adam, you noticed the reaction Ziggler got as he came out to the ring and when the 1, 2, 3 happened.
I'm going to try not going off here, but full disclaimer, I'm about to get very, very heated. This should have been the main event, for starters. As soon as I saw that package, there was no air out of the balloon. I got enraged. I got PO'd, if you will. We'll keep this a family-friendly show. I got absolutely PO'd. There was no excuse why this could not have been your main event. You were clearly only cared about that triple threat match because that's what led off the show. And for an hour, you build it as, this was the main event, but we're putting it at the beginning. Okay, great. Then you put that IC title match where it should have been in the main event, and that's your go-home. Even if Ziggler was losing or winning, it doesn't matter. That's your go-home. That's how you leave the show. That's how it should have ended. Whew. Okay, now I got that off my chest. This match was fantastic. Allie, I'm more of a wrestling guy, so I love the triple threat match a little bit more than this. But overall, this was my second favorite match on the card. Start to finish, it was beautiful. And I said it on the preview show. I said, I think we're going to get a bit more out of The Miz than the standard soft WWE style. And I think we saw The Miz take a few extra bumps that maybe he wouldn't have taken in the status quo match. I think we saw him pull out a little bit more. All the drama that was involved, even just the way they worked and walked in the ring, showed a little bit extra something out of both The Miz and Dolph Ziggler, out of both competitors here. A pluses to both of them. Ziggler's your new champion. I think they made Dolph Ziggler relevant again. And another thought I had, Atlee, you know, there was a rumor going around, and I don't know much of a rumor it was, but DirecTV supposedly, quote-unquote, spoiled the end of this match. Apparently something came out that said, you know, watch Ziggler's final match on WWE, or it was something weird like that. And this DirecTV needs to change their number, and WWE needs to change their number to 1-800-SWERVED, because they swerved all of us. I think everyone was convinced what Ziggler was doing on social media and all the backstage goodbyes, and then DirecTV comes out of this out of, like, nowhere. I think we were completely swerved, and I got to give WWE credit. This could have maybe started revitalizing Dolph Ziggler, his character, and the rest of his career.
Well, this is the first step toward revitalizing Dolph Ziggler, and I hope they keep him strong on the weeks and months ahead on SmackDown, just like they did earlier when he won that number one contendership match for the World Heavyweight title in those 4 weeks leading to SummerSlam. They had him win every single match and kept him looking strong. They need to do that now in order to justify this big win that he just got. But moving right along to the second women's match on the show, we had Alexa Bliss versus Naomi. Now, during the pregame show, the kickoff show, whatever you want to call it, Shane McMahon and Daniel Bryan told Alexa Bliss that Becky Lynch was out due to medical reasons and that she will get a title shot in 4 weeks on SmackDown in Glasgow, Scotland, against Becky Lynch, which is going to be, again, November 8th. But tonight, she's going to wrestle somebody. They didn't say who it was. It turned out being Naomi, and Naomi got the win over Alexa Bliss. So I kind of liked what they did here, because right now, you have more shine on Naomi as a character because for the next 4 weeks, you're not going to see Becky Lynch wrestling. You're just going to see Alexa Bliss talking about her match coming up on SmackDown and hyping the fact that, hey, you know, I have a women's title match. But now Naomi has a claim saying, I beat the number one contender, so perhaps that title shot should be mine. So that's probably going to be the feud, the direction they're going on SmackDown for the next 4 weeks.
I got to admit, I was kind of selfishly rooting for Asuka to come out and, like, debut. I was kind of, like, selfishly hoping Asuka would just come out and, like, that place would, like, lose its you-know-what. But I digress. I think this makes this very interesting. There was one thing I noticed, and Atlee, I don't know if you noticed this, but, you know, we were talking pre-show, and to me, Naomi didn't show any fire in that match. Alexa's been running fire in every move that she does, every facial expression that she makes, every promo that she cuts, and everything she does in the ring, there's been a fire behind it. Like, she's out there to prove something. Naomi and me kind of fell flat. It was like, I'm out here doing my job, and I want to go home. Now, I could be wrong. I was half in and out of this match, but honestly, I didn't see the same fire out of Naomi that I saw out of Alexa. And that kind of stood out to me.
Adam Cohn throwing shade on Naomi. Oh, my goodness.
Hey, hey. I like her as a wrestler. I've been one of her biggest supporters since she originally was in NXT Season 3. I was one of her biggest supporters because I think she's got all the athletic tools in the world. However, this just could have been an off night, or I could be completely mistaken. I'm still on the Alexa Bliss bandwagon for Women's Champion.
The official main event of the evening turned out to be Bray Wyatt versus Randy Orton, and Bray Wyatt won after Luke Harper made his surprise return to WWE. It was a heated grudge match going into it. Personally, I hate it when they locked up at the beginning because it was like, what? It's a grudge match. They hate each other. They're going to do like a collar and elbow lockup. You know, that's just me, though. But then basically the finish came when it distracted Randy Orton off of the Luke Harper return, walked right into the Sister Abigail for the 1-2-3. Now, as far as the match goes, it was okay. Nothing to write home about by any stretch of the imagination. But that's kind of what happens when you have a Randy Orton match, because he has, I mean, a lot of people give John Cena crap for his five moves of doom. Well, in my opinion, the real five moves of doom captain is Randy Orton, because he does his five moves, the Hangman DDT, the power slam, the RKO, the stomp and everything. Sometimes he'll fake for the punt. And that's really all you get out of him. He doesn't do anything else out of the ordinary. And it's really hard to have a standout match with somebody who is just not going to do anything more than he needs to do, because he's a big superstar. He's getting paid millions of dollars. He's made his money. And plus, he's had a lot of injuries. And he's getting a little older, so he's going to try to make himself last as long as possible. But again, it wasn't a bad match, just not a main event caliber match in my opinion. And I really wonder why they wanted to end it with this as opposed to the Intercontinental Championship match, because I think it would have been better to send people home happy instead of sending people home, you know, upset. But then again, if you're an internet fan who reads the dirt sheets and goes to sites like Gerwick.net, Adam, you realize that this is Bray Wyatt's first big win in a main event against a big name like Randy Orton. Now, you and I were talking about this on our preview show to No Mercy, that Bray Wyatt should get the win, but he's not going to get the win. But all of a sudden, boom, he gets started into the main event situation, main event spot at No Mercy, and he has to win. Now, some people are probably going to say he should have won clean. Well, he's a heel, and the Bray Wyatt character will win at all costs. So that's why I have no problem with the fact that he won via distraction interference by Luke Harper. But is this the big win to really separate Bray Wyatt, to say now Bray Wyatt has finally arrived in the main event scene, or is this just more standard fare for the Eater of Worlds?
No, this is just more standard. Like, this is, yeah, it's a win against a mega-level guy, but this wasn't a standout win to me. It's not his separating moment from the pack that he's going to go break off and challenge for the WWE World Championship. I marked out when Luke Harper came out, and I really marked out when Bray won, because, again, you know, internet fans that have gone through Bray's career that are really super behind him, and not just saying other fans aren't, but it's like, we've been on this Bray Wyatt bandwagon for so long, we dealt with him as Husky Harris. And I've been on record of saying before, I think this may have been the best repackage WWE has ever come up with. Taking someone from Husky Harris, who had no relevance, to Bray Wyatt, who has all the relevance and is super over. It's totally opposite ends of the spectrum. And to do that kind of a swing, but you don't give the push behind it, I think is very, very wrong. And I'm hoping this is the start of a push. Honestly, I thought we were going to get an actual Sister Abigail coming out. I wasn't expecting Luke Harper. But a quick shout out to one of my friends, Eric Rubes, who called this before that match started. He said either we're going to get Luke Harper coming out or we're getting Sister Abigail. And he called Luke Harper. And I'm like, wasn't Luke Harper drafted to Raw? I didn't even know what he was drafted to. So this was a well done, nice surprise. But Atlee, I don't know about you, but did you think Harper was going to turn on Bray in this match?
I did. As soon as he came in there and hit the Sister Abigail for the 1-2-3, he was standing there. The camera was focused on Luke Harper for a very long time. And I really thought that they were going to turn on him, and it was going to be a deal where Harper turns, and then we have a Bray Wyatt versus Luke Harper feud, which would be great, but that's not what happened. Luke Harper is now with Bray Wyatt, and I think it makes the feud, whoever Bray Wyatt feuds with, more entertaining, because in a sense now, you have to go through Luke Harper to get to Bray Wyatt. But just kind of like sum up the big win versus the pay-per-view win. And is this the big win that Bray Wyatt needed to kind of firmly establish that he has arrived in the main event scene? The answer is no, because you got to remember, this match was not hyped as the main event. The world title match was promoted as the main event of the show until, again, WWE said late yesterday that was going to be the first match. And we all assumed the IC title match would be the main event until, again, this match became the main event. So no one saw this coming as the main event. And on top of it, the match, you know, wasn't really, you know, anything special. So therefore, Bray Wyatt gets the win over a superstar like Randy Orton. It's the biggest credential name he's gone over on. But because of how it was set up and because of how the match actually went, I don't think it really sets Bray Wyatt, you know, away from everybody else. I don't think it makes him a bigger name than he was, you know, a few weeks ago. But those are our thoughts, ladies and gentlemen, for the 2016 No Mercy. That emanated again from the Golden One Center in Sacramento, California. But Adam, what are your final thoughts on the second SmackDown brand pay-per-view?
I think this was solid. Outside of the three big matches, this was a solid card. And Atlee, I think you said in our pre-show meeting, and you can quote me if I'm wrong, you said this felt like a three-hour SmackDown to you?
Yes, when we were talking about this off-air, this definitely felt like a three-hour SmackDown to me. Definitely a better, you know, than what a SmackDown would be, but again, it wasn't like the pay-per-view of the decade by any stretch of the imagination either. And there's a lot of reasons that you could say why this pay-per-view really wasn't like a knockdown drag-out of a show, but it is what it is. I mean, when you divide the roster in half, you're going to have these situations. And also, when you're having two pay-per-views a month, in most cases, you're going to, the excitement's not going to be there nearly as much as it would have been if you had everybody on one roster and essentially having one show a month. Because in 3 weeks, you have the Raw-branded Hell in the Cell pay-per-view, and then you have Survivor Series next month in November. So the thing is now, SmackDown only has the build to Survivor Series, where Raw has the build to Hell in the Cell, then they got to start building the Survivor Series. So I wonder if SmackDown's going to start building to Survivor Series now, or are they going to wait until Raw starts building the Survivor Series and start building their matches as well?
I think we're going to get one major SmackDown show, quote-unquote, where we'll get like the world title defended, just because I think the seven-week span, or whatever the week is, whatever the number is, it's way, way too long to have an overlap like that. Can they do it? Yes, because it's a two-hour show, not three like Raw. Hashtag Team SmackDown. But I gotta say, this is gonna be very interesting to see how they do build this. They've got the stars to do it. And now in retrospect, we look back from the draft. You know, with now two brand pay-per-views in, plus SummerSlam. You know, Atlee, you and I were at that draft when they were here in Massachusetts, and we said, and I think the consensus was Raw came out ahead with all the superstars, but man, SmackDown came out ahead with the writing and the storytelling. And they've taken what roster they have and have taken and made gold out of it. And I give them a ton of credit. The show was what it was. It was a good to great show, and I thoroughly enjoyed it.
I'll give the show a B- for my overall grade. But folks, that's going to do it with our No Mercy review here at GoRec.net for all the latest in pro wrestling news and rumors. Keep your computer locked at GERWECK.net, GoRec.net, your source for pro wrestling news since 1997. For Adam Cohn, this is Atlee Green. Sayonara, suckers. We'll see you next time.
Laters.